You're listening to The Tech Agenda with Ian Kyo, powered by PwC. The Currency.News. It pays to be curious.
More than half of Irish firms are boosting their investment in cybersecurity. But there's still plenty of work to be done, particularly when it comes to proactive measures. That's according to the PwC 2026 Digital Trust Insight Survey, which reveals that Irish businesses face greater challenges than their global counterparts in adopting AI for cyber defence. The survey also highlights that Ireland is behind the curve when it comes to preparing for quantum computing and the potential risks to current encryption systems. To break down the findings and discuss what this means for businesses in Ireland, I'm joined in the studio today by Len McAuliffe, partner in PwC Ireland's cybersecurity practice, and Moira Cronin, digital risk and resilience partner with PwC Ireland. You're both very welcome.
Thank you.
Len, there's a lot to digest in that report. There's a load of data, there's a load of statistics. We have what's going on in Ireland, but also we're comparing it to what's going on internationally. And just a big question at the start, how are the threats evolving? If I was to have this conversation with you a couple of years ago, what were those cyber threats versus what they are now? And how are companies evolving to deal with this?
Yes, I suppose the old traditional threats of ransomware, which everybody fears, are still there. Distributed denial of service attacks are also still prevalent in Ireland, and you know there's been a focus on some of our banking clients recently as well, and that's just to stop services and hold them to ransom another way, or else it's used to also to distract them while they're trying to do other hacking methods. But what's come out in the survey is cloud security, which has come up again, and this is really related to there's mass adoption now of cloud, and then cloud security misconfigurations is one of the main issues, and that pops up because, you know, people are spinning up systems in the cloud very easily, and it sometimes is hard to control that environment. And sometimes there's also confusion too between who's managing the technical stack through the cloud.
What do you mean by that? Yeah. It's a technical term. There's a lot of people here listening who don't.
Yeah, fair enough. So when you're given a service by a cloud provider, there'll be networks, there'll be firewalls, there'll be intrusion detection systems, etc. Then there'll be the servers themselves, and are they hardened? And sometimes there's confusion as who's responsible for the configuration of all of these, because it is quite complex when a service has been provided, when you have all of those layers of systems, network security, applications and data. So you have to get that very clear and who's responsible for what. Other thing that's popped up, and I think this has got to do with the geopolitical landscape, because organizations running critical infrastructure like electricity, water and gas are experiencing an increase in attacks. And that's really because there's people scanning our
systems. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Across Europe now, and I work with a lot of the utilities, and all of their systems are constantly being probed to see if there's weaknesses. So if you are another nation state that's looking for vulnerabilities in your critical infrastructure to take you down, and that's going across Europe, then you would target areas like electricity, water and gas. And that's why I think what came up was connected devices like OT and IoT are now getting attacked more. That's those systems that we say run gas pipes or run electricities. They're not traditional IT, they're more...
But it's real, it's real physical infrastructure.
Exactly. I mean, there's been hacks that were really interesting. There's one in the US where a water treatment facility was hacked. And if you play around with the chemicals and poison the water, you could cause a major physical attack, not just a virtual attack.
You're very welcome to the podcast. We've had Len in before, but this is your first time. So I just want to ask you, resilience. I know it's something you've spoken about at various conferences and at various events, but resilience when it comes to cybersecurity. And I read through the Digital Trust Survey, and it's a word that keeps on coming up again and again and again.
Very much so. And thank you for having me on. When I think of the word resilience, it's no longer about just responding and recovering to a crisis that happens, right? It is now about actually learning from what happened and preparing for something like that to happen again. So when we look at this and put it into context, you're really trying to pick out what are your most critical services and products, because you can't look at absolutely everything, right? Lynn spoke about the tech stack there, and you know, even the number of interdependencies and systems and all the rest. You really have to pick out what is most critical and what is driving your business. So if you were to put it in layman's terms, if we're down tomorrow, we have no systems, what is the service or the product that you want back up first? And you need to pick those out and be very, very clear as to what systems and processes are actually driving them.
Are companies doing that? And when you explained it there in a really well way, and it makes eminent sense. But are companies doing that to identify what their real risks are? It's an easy thing for companies to look and say, oh, here's our risk register and we can deal with this. And at times I feel it's often a procedural basis. But the way you're speaking about it is to really identify the one or two things that can kill your company.
Exactly. And I feel like a lot of the regs that have come out of late, so DORA being one, NIS 2 being another, they very much are pushing organizations in that way, right? They really want companies to stand back and say, right, these are the five things we're going to actually focus on, and we're going to map those out and actually understand what's driving them. And the big part here, which I'm sure Lynn you'll come to as well, is the risk of third parties. Now, any of the incidents that we've seen in the media in the last number of months and years, a lot of them are at third parties. They're not necessarily within the organisation themselves, but the reputational risk obviously falls on the company that's servicing the customer and can't provide the product or the service.
But how can companies understand those risks to make sure they're getting the right ones? Because there's so much confusion, people are concerned, and also a lot of companies, businesses, particularly small and medium-sized businesses, are just trying to get by on a day-to-day basis. So how can they understand what those risks are, and how can they set themselves up? Maybe you first, and then I'll come back to you on that, Lynn, because I see you nodding.
So realistically, what you have to do is you have to talk through how the service gets delivered or how the product gets delivered. So you start off with the business process of this is how it works in practice. So I want to be able to make payments for my customers, right? What business processes do I have in there that actually execute that payment? And then you look at the systems that are underneath that, and you really have to go back to the, well, what could go wrong here? Could, could we have an outage on a system that would be relying on another system within the organization? Or is there a third party involved here? But it really is about doing that almost end-to-end mapping of what's delivering the system and identifying the what can go wrong and really putting the controls in place to address those risks.
Yeah, and from a cyber perspective, what we're really seeing here is there was a move, there was maturity models that were used all along, like a NIST framework, and saying, oh, how mature are you in CMOI? I'm a one, I'm a two, I'm a three, and they were reporting that to boards, right? But now boards have really copped on, because with legislation or regulation like NIS 2, boards are accountable. So boards are now asking questions like, what are our real cyber risks? And then, okay, there's your risk. What are the threat scenarios that are related to those risks that really would affect my company? Not everybody's company and different.
But mine.
Yes. And that's key, right? So we do, it's really change, right? So what we do then is we map out their key risks. We map out all of the different threat scenarios that we know that hackers are using in their industry and what they're targeting. And then what we do is we map those threat scenarios to their controls framework to see are their controls operating effectively to mitigate those risks. And that's been a big change. That's what's been reported to the boards now.
Great. I'll come back to boards in a few minutes. Can I ask you just about AI? Mm-hmm. AI is every conversation I have at the moment. AI is a profound part of it. But how is AI reshaping or shaping cybersecurity? Yeah. Both on one side, it can help. On the other side, it can attack.
Yeah, it's a very good point, because there is two sides to the story. I mean, from an attack point of view, we're seeing a big uptake of the usage of AI for phishing and social engineering, because AI can look through all of your social media and then create these hyper-personalized phishing emails that are catching people out by taking in all of the data that it learns about you. That's one. We're seeing a massive uptake in deep fake audio and video, which is used to impersonate executives and authorize fraudulent transactions. In malware now, anybody could go into their room and ask ChatGPT to create some malware for them. So that's really tricky. And the last one, the point three in this one, and the one that kind of scares us all as well, is that zero-day exploits are exploits that no one knows about. So there's no patches out for them yet. And before, it was really in the dark net and people researching these and testing applications would find them. But now you can use AI to look for flaws or vulnerabilities in code automatically, and people find these zero-day exploits easily.
And I think it really brings us back to the point that, like, when you see the level of sophistication that we're seeing in AI, and, you know, I know Lynn will talk about other threats, but you really have to come back to, you have to protect your own. You have to understand what's going on in your organisation, what's driving your services, what's driving your products, and really having a very clear understanding of that. That's the only way that you can begin to start preparing to fight this.
Len, I just want to come to you about the idea of the skills gap. It's a big topic, it's a big issue. And I also want to talk about the role of managed services to kind of plug that skills gap that exists.
Yeah, like, we see teams right across Ireland and struggling to recruit and retain cyber security staff. And this is a major problem for everybody in the competition out there as well. So what we're seeing is that organisations, for the core cyber security services that they provide the business, maybe their own core security team. But areas like, as we mentioned before, like third party risk management, where it's a repetitive task, where you'd have to go through 1,000, you know, suppliers and say, well, I'm going to outsource that as a managed services, let them manage it, and then kind of report back into one individual then on the team of and report that up. So we're seeing a big uptake on managed services, especially for repetitive tasks. It could be like threat and vulnerability management, where you're scanning their perimeter constantly for them and then updating them if there's any major threats or any major vulnerabilities that they may have in their network. Another one that we're seeing as well is that we're working on at the moment is security architecture as a service, as a managed service, because it's very hard to retain architects with 10 to 15 years experience to review all your new projects. So what we're doing is creating where they'd have a bank of these to rely on and use them when needed as well. So those areas where repetitive tasks, hard to get the skills in, that's where we're seeing that people are outsourcing these.
The big change I'm seeing with clients here as well, Ian, is that there's a regulatory requirement to do a lot of this testing. And there's a lot of firms, you know, that are in scope for the likes of DORA and NIS2 that just wouldn't have the bodies on the ground, right? And wouldn't have the skills or experience. And rather than bringing them in-house and trying to manage them and report them to your board, it is almost a better business decision to actually think, well, let me play to my strengths here and let me outsource this. And that, I think, yes, it does create another third party that you have to look after. But at the same time, it very much...
But you're bringing in that skill set that you
need. Exactly, exactly. And you're bringing it in for someone that's, you know, doing it every single day of the week.
Okay, quantum security. Discuss.
So quantum computing, okay, it's you know, it's going to solve problems quicker, like factoring large numbers, and it's going to be exponentially faster than classical computers. And then there's a direct threat then to encryption, like public key encryption, digital signatures, even blockchain integrity. So there's a real risk here that, and they're saying, like, you know, the quantum day is coming sooner than expected, that they're thinking by 2030 that this computational systems will be able to crack current encryption. So that puts every single system under threat if you can crack the encryption. And a big fear at the moment is that when hackers are now hacking and extracting data from an organization, the data is saying, oh, well, it's encrypted. It's encrypted with the old encryption, and that's that data that's been extracted will now be cracked by new quantum computing controls as well.
Anything to add to that, right? Because this is constantly changing. When you're mapping out the processes that I spoke about and identifying those risks, that needs to be on some type of a technology-enabled solution, and it needs to be live. It cannot be in a Visio chart. It cannot just be stored somewhere, because realistically, business processes, systems, they're changing all the time, as are third parties, right? So you really need to stay up to date with them. And the really big part of resilience, which is different in some ways to, you know, traditional business continuity management, it's really about taking scenarios and testing to make sure that if that quantum computing actually does undo encryption, that you're identifying that as a scenario and you can test for it to see what the impact
would
be.
Proactive as opposed to waiting, I think, is the point you're
exactly.
getting to.
Very much so. And it really is about getting in there so that you can be ready for when something like this may occur, because you will never get that exact scenario.
Yeah, we're seeing organizations, right, and they're just not getting ready quick enough. I think in the banking sector, yeah, they've started in that discovery phase, like where people don't even know across their whole enterprise all of the encryption and encryption products that they have across all the different layers, whether it's your data layer encryption, whether it's your server encryption, whether it's your network encryption. And all of those are based on those encryption algorithms. So it's very important to do that discovery phase first, and then even have a plan in place from now until 2030 that how am I going to deal with this? Because what we're seeing is that some of these applications that rely on encryption, they're hard-coded with the encryption. So it's a lot trickier to unravel all of this in 5 years.
I'll come to the survey and some of the data points in a minute. But when you sit down with companies, what's the first thing you tell them that they need to be doing? Or what's... And I know you normally bill for this, but let's put it out there for free
today.
Give
it to for free this morning, yeah. So really, Ian, my view when I go in to an organisation, you can enter a company at any point, right? They could be in the middle of a crisis, or they could be looking to implement a new piece of regulation in relation to resilience, or they could be just getting their house in order because they know that this is a very real risk, right? So it really depends on where you join an organisation on their journey. If unfortunately it is in a crisis, then something has happened and obviously we need to help them come through
panic stations, let's get through it.
Exactly. But if you're coming in a more of a, you know, we need to implement this regulation or we just want to get our house in order, it's very much about identify and understand what are those critical components to your business, whether it's products or services or whatever it is.
Yeah, when we first go into a business, it's really you're looking at it's a current state assessment. And what you're doing there before, again, it used to be that using those maturity models and those well-known frameworks and kind of benchmarking you're compliant with most of the controls in this framework. But now that's changing, as mentioned earlier, the way the boards are also looking for how you manage risks and threats. That we're doing a lot of threat modeling work specifically for organizations, looking at their whole IT environment, their data, their applications, their networks, and seeing that, okay, these are the threats that are known for your industry. These are the threats known for competitors that you've had. And what we do is we build security programs to enhance and focus on those controls that will mitigate the threats that are most relevant to them.
You've mentioned a couple of times, and I think it's an interesting point about the role of the board. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, boards meet, they discuss, they look through data packs, and they assume that management are running the company. But this is now a boardroom matter, I think.
Yeah, and we're definitely seeing more and more of that before it used to be, you know, a quarterly update from the chief information security officer, and he'd have a presentation and saying these are the key threats and, you know, this is how we're managing them. Now they're looking for real data. I had a client only 3 weeks ago where the board had said, okay, operationally prove to me that you are mitigating these threats that you're talking about. So what we've done with organizations is have that, we have a SaaS solution that identifies your risks, maps your threat scenarios, maps your controls then to mitigate those threat scenarios and all of the metrics that feed into those controls. So you can actually drill down. So if they said, okay, why is this risk out of risk appetite this month? And you say, okay, let's drill down into that. Well, there's the threat scenario. Here's the controls. Well, these controls aren't operating at the moment because we had a new acquisition and we don't have 90% coverage anymore. And they can really drill down and see that. But that's what boards are looking for now, back down to those, you know, operational metrics as well.
A big thing I'm seeing with boards is value, right? So particularly from a regulatory standpoint, we have a lot of fatigue, particularly in the financial services sector, right? Where we have just a lot of regs coming at organisations and the boards are saying...
It's hard to stay on top of it all.
You can't stay on top of it. And it comes back to the earlier point of you can't really just be driven by a piece of regulation. You have to look after your own patch as such. But what we're finding now is that the question that's coming from the boards is, well, we've given X amount to implement DORA, we've given X amount to implement operational resilience. Where are we getting a return on investment here? And what we're seeing is the best kids in the class are actually looking at, well, we've done all this mapping out, we actually understand our environment, we understand what's driving our products, and we can see things that we haven't seen before. So I can now see that I've got 14 third parties across the globe that are actually doing the same thing for me. And what we're seeing is that organisations are using that information to almost drive strategic decision making, to say, actually, do I need third party? Do I need 14
third
parties?
I just want to ask you about that, both, because third party is something that's come up throughout our conversation here today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by it? What should people be looking at?
So from a third party perspective, it really is that you have somebody outside your own organisation, and that could be intragroup, right, that is actually supporting part of your service, right? So it is a risk because they're a third party. They don't necessarily comply with the same policies and procedures that you have in-house, and therefore it needs a level of risk management and organisation to be able to do that.
Yeah, like from a cybersecurity perspective, attackers are looking at weaknesses in your supply chain. So, you could be the best in the world. It could be, with your security teams, which are huge and well-financed and all. But if you have a third party interconnecting, providing a service in, that's what attackers will attack and then find a backdoor into your organization. So now what we're seeing is third party risk management is compulsory as part of regulations, because people, it was a checklist before. People say, here's my 100 or 1,000 third parties. I'll do a review of them and I'll come up with a risk, and they have them on a spreadsheet and nothing ever done about it. But now what we're seeing, like we even started a managed service in this space, say, here's a SaaS solution, here's all your third parties. We have people reviewing all of these constantly. And now the new thing, we have real-time monitoring of these third parties to see if they have had any incidents as well.
So I'm conscious of time. We're discussing the Digital Trust Insight Survey. I've read it. It's a fascinating piece, and I urge everyone to have a look at it, because, it's 4,000 companies and business leaders all over the world facilitating into it. When you looked at it, what was there a point or two that really struck you from it, and kind of the insights that businesses can take from it?
Definitely for me, it's how fast the world is changing, right? And it's how, what was applicable 2 or 3 years ago is very different to what's going to be applicable in 3 or 4 years' time. And I come back to, I suppose, what we're driving with a lot of our clients at the moment is that you cannot be fully prepared for any of these. This is inevitable and it's going to happen to you. So you really have to understand what you're trying to protect and make sure that you're protecting that properly.
Yeah, there's been massive change in the world from an economic point of view, from a geopolitical point of view. I think the threats have increased. I think AI has proliferated that as well.
And to a way, people are still trying to figure it out, lad.
Exactly, and which makes it even more risky for organisations even adapting it as well. And then you have other areas like post-quantum computing coming up that people are trying to get their head around. So the environment and risk landscape is changing so quickly that it is hard for organisations to adapt, upskill and manage these threats.
Well, look, thanks very much for sharing your insight. I think it's make sure you know what your risks are and try and mitigate them. Not to simplify it, but that seems to be the big key theme coming through the conversation, Maura.
Very much so. And it's really about understanding that and your third parties, because we see that as really probably one of the strongest themes coming through on any of the clients that we're working with at the moment.
Well, Len McAuliffe, partner in PwC Ireland's cybersecurity practice, and Maura Cronin, digital risk and resilience partner with PwC Ireland, thank you very much for joining me here today.
Thanks,
thank
Ian.
You.
Thank you for listening to The Tech Agenda with Ian Keogh. Powered by PwC, thecurrency.news. It pays to be